I would say I am one of those people who didn't get into UX with a UX portfolio. I didn't have any.
We have to talk about it. So how did you get into UX if you did not have a portfolio? All right, Amit Shetty. Good to have you here, finally, Amit. And welcome to Detox, the design podcast. It's, I think, roughly been 1.5 months or 2 months now.
That I think it's been 3 months. I think somewhere around, yeah, more than that, actually. I think September or October, somewhere around, we had our event.
Wow.
And then, you know, it's been chaos and...
Yeah,
you know, I know how you're editing, but you know, I'm so glad to be, you know, on your platform. And I would like to say this is my first podcast I'm ever appearing on.
Really? So,
yeah.
Wow.
Like I've done online workshops, but I've never been on podcasts. I always, you know, thought, you know, how it would be. But and then there you are, you say that, you know, appear on guest. I'm like, yes, I want to do it.
I'm so happy that I'm getting you all to one of the podcasts. You know, I'm sure many of them will follow. Because, see, you know, when I spoke to you that day, and then, so we've been connected on LinkedIn, right, afterwards.
Yeah.
And then I've been seeing, and so the very first post after we met and then that I saw on LinkedIn was the top 100 mentors on ADP list for that year. I mean, there are some 8,000 about...
15, I think somewhere around about 12,000 last I remember.
Wow. So about 12,000 all over the world, design, mostly design mentors on ADP list.
Yeah.
And then you happen to be one of the top 100 most impactful mentors. And you've contributed over, I think, 3,000 plus minutes. And you've recently hit
a century sessions.
Of sessions also, right?
Yeah, yesterday itself it happened. And that's the fun part, right? Like, I would say it was such an... unexpected thing for me to start mentorship,
right?
Like I still can't call myself a mentor because I'm like, I am still learning. What am I going to teach people? Like, I don't know what is happening, right? It's that's the fun part. But yeah, like those conversations and talking to people, that's just
absolutely.
I think I am more outspoken on these platforms than I am in my personal life, I would say.
No, guys, I think the very first meeting, like the only time that we met, it was such a friendly approach that you have, and you're super approachable and super easy to speak to. And I think I was just going through your, you know, reviews that people have left on your ADP profile. And I see this there also. You're super approachable. So I see where this is coming from, you know.
So one of my approaches has always been like, when I talk to people, it's more about, you know, everyone has their own worries. Everyone has their life. They live beyond these screens.
Right.
But when you meet, right, it has to be that you meet as a person, you meet them as a friend, you understand what is the issue, why they are coming in. And that's where the conversation starts. The connection, what we talk about, right? It's in a day and age where, you know, we run behind followers and subscribers.
Yeah.
Somewhere we feel that connection is a lot. And we are in an industry of designing for humans. And if we don't connect with humans, how are we supposed to design?
I know, right? I know. That's, I think, the fundamental logic behind everything, connecting with designers. I think I was just having a conversation with one of my friends. Her name is Uma. She was on the podcast previously.
Mm-hmm.
And she's now a visiting faculty at NID and NIFT. So we were just having a conversation about the exact same thing, connecting with the people, with the humans. It's always, you know, I happened to be at a founders meet yesterday, and there was one investor. Okay. I'll tell you a simple example. So after the session, you know who people wanted to speak to was, right?
Yeah.
The investor, of course, the investor, right? Everybody wanted to speak. And there were 40 to 50 founders pitching to the same investor one by one. And that person was so, so drained. And it was quite evident, you know, the way she was, her body language and everything. And I said, I'm not here to pitch, or I don't want your money. I'm here to give you a glass of water. Do you want one?
I mean, that's such a basic human etiquette, right?
Yeah.
Like that's where, you know, and this reminds me that recently, right, I've been a lot looking into focus and how human minds, and I just started listening to this audiobook called The Lost Focus.
Okay.
Like, okay. And this artist, like this writer, I heard him on, you know, one of Steve Barlett's podcast called The Diary of CEO. And he was talking about, you know, how as humans, we have lost the ability of focusing.
Right. It's
like we all feel that we are spending so much time on screens and, you know, mobiles.
Right.
It's not at a personal level. It's such a systematic problem. It's at a global level. It's not only you suffering. And that's where, you know, he talks about that, how he went for a digital detox.
Yeah.
Altogether, like, you know, he scrapped his iPhone and he took a phone which barely has any, I don't think so, it has even internet. And he just took his iPod with music and podcast and, you know, a laptop which doesn't have, like, ability to connect to internet. And he went to, like, end of USA. And went there the first day. He went to the sea and he just stood there looking at the sea, and he doesn't remember how much time he spent.
Oh, wow.
And the day, that day he describes, right, he came back, he just went to sleep. He slept for 15 hours. He woke up.
Wow.
Like, he was like, I was in a daze. I was in a, you know, euphoria kind of thing. And he lived like that for a week.
Wow.
So I've just reached that much part.
Wow.
I have to listen more. But but that's the thing, right? Like focus, human connecting, having empathy. We all talk about empathy, but
yeah,
it's not just products. And that's where, you know, people say that, hey, UX is a career. But if you actually look at UX is a term that has come up in last 20 years, I would say. People were still designing. It's all about, the whole human life is about experience.
Yeah.
The evolution is about experience.
Absolutely.
The societies have been built on experience. And what we are doing is we are just designing a part of experience. You know, that there's a very fun, or I would say I find it fun, but it's a very like a tacky statement where in medical term, users are called who are, you know, use, like, they are addicted to a medicine. Like, they are, you are a user of this substance, you are a user of this substance, right? Because what a user means is you're constantly using it, and using it comes from that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, wow. I know I have, I'm going to speak a lot of controversies, but that's the fact. Like, you know, it's not fun and games. It's always, there's a lot going on in the industry, beyond industry.
Right.
But that's where, you know, that fun part is creating experience. Like, you know, I think you met Pratima when you came to office, and her, like, she's like the inspiration for me, and, you know, the way she takes. And she always talks about, you know, that doesn't matter what you do. You are setting up an event, you are working with a client, you are going to gift someone or meeting someone. It's your responsibility to create an experience, because that's what people are going to remember. Right. And she always pushes us to create that unique experience. Like, we can all do, you know, okay, whatever general aspect is, but how do you go one step beyond? How do you make that connect? Is something very important.
Very interesting points made, Amit. Boys and girls, here is Amit Shetty, lead UX designer of Divami Design Labs, Hyderabad. And he's been into design for above 3 years, roughly about 3 years, into UX?
3.5 years now, yeah.
3.5 years, yeah. And he is coming from a very diverse background, which I want to talk about, because he's done animation, he's done mass communication, And then,
and masters in animation, like PGDM, yeah,
exactly,
animation.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm just imagining, like, what is the thought process behind all of this? How did you switch from animation to UX and then now mentoring? What is happening? What, how did this happen? Come on, tell me.
So I'll tell you, I was a typical, like, born and brought up in Mumbai. So I come from Mumbai, like, you know, I stay in Thane, like, that's not technically Mumbai, but not a few will know Thane because, well, Mumbai is the closest. So I tell that, okay, Thane is where I stay.
No, but Thane is nice. Actually, I like Thane better than Mumbai.
Yeah. Like, I live near like the Air Force area. So I have like, it's developed, lot more developed now. Earlier, it was like more like there was forest and all. But yeah.
Right.
So born and brought up in Mumbai. And, you know, typical Indian parents, like my dad, you know, I grew up in a chawl. Like we were living in chawl. My dad was like, till my age standard, my dad decided, you know what, I'm not going to bring up my kids in a chawl. I want to upgrade their life. So we shifted to apartments in my 9th standard, I think. And from there, he had certain expectation that, hey, you know what, my son will be an engineer. Like typical Indian typical. Story, right?
Yeah, typical.
And I was the type of student, like, I was an average student. I was not like, you know, ranking top or something. I would study in school itself. Whenever the teacher is teaching, yeah, you study right. Whatever they, I would never study at home. My parents forced me to go to 2 tuitions because they knew I will never study at home. Like, and somehow like 10th, I passed and, you know, got into science and then I did 12th. And I was I wanted to get into automobile. Like I found it interesting because
high five,
I would man. Say, I would say, because I'll tell you why, because, you know, I was always a fan of cartoons and I loved watching cartoons and anime. And one of the main, like one of my favorite things was Power Rangers. Yes. To watch it.
Yeah.
And the like their power up suits, their bikes and their vehicles and the Megazords.
Oh,
and, like, yes. That was an inspiration. You had those and then Beyblade and all of these things, right?
Yes.
And I was like, okay, what is the closest thing I can get to do? Okay, I can maybe do automobile. I passed my 12th like with average 65% something and I gave like CET. I didn't study. I would say I didn't study that seriously. Like, okay. Because I was like, okay, let's see where it goes.
Right.
The, you know, all the rankings came in, everything. And, you know, there are those admission rounds, right?
Yeah.
So round one went. I gave AIEEE. And with Fluke, I got like 72, positive 72. I was like happy. I was like, whoa.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's a big deal. Like, getting positive 72 is big. But yeah. For, I would say, my luck, I don't know what. With every cutoff round, ideally, the cutoff decreases. But here, for AIEEE, it kept on increasing.
How is that?
I was like, I don't know. So, you know, it was three rounds. And then, you know, somewhere in between, I found out that from one of my friends that, hey, there's a animation degree course that has been launched by Mac, right? And he was like, you know, it's a 3 years degree. And one of my friend had gone to Encore and he had told me. And I was thinking, why can't I do animation?
Right.
And then it was one day where I was just discussing with my dad and he was like, you know what, we will get an admission into an engineering college with donation and all. Right. That's it. And I still remember this day that we left from our house in the morning to go to a bank to not go to a bank, I think to travel to the college to talk about the admission. And on the way, you know, almost I would say some 5-6 kilometers away from house, near a bridge, my dad stopped the bike and asked me, you know, what do you want to do exactly? Oh. I said, you know what? Whatever donation amount you are going to pay for engineering, I can do my animation degree 3 years of that. And I feel I want to do animation. And that moment, we went to the bank. We got a DD for the admission process of animation. And that's how I got into animation.
Wow. Kudos to Uncle. I was just about to say something like, paise zyada de dunga, but engineering hi karega. But no, it's not like that.
Yeah. The whole point is like, see, my dad comes from a, you know, I would say he's like the youngest of 13 siblings. Like he's been born and brought up in like a small town in Karnataka. And he ran away from home at the age of 15. Crazy. Right. He came to Mumbai and he started living like on the streets and then slowly got a job in some small factory.
Wow.
And that's where he felt, right? He had done like barely 10th pass. And that's where he has always been my role model.
Wow. You know,
because he works in the garment. He's working in the same company for last 35 years.
Wow.
The wow. place where he started just from, you know, I would say sweeping. Now he's handling the whole, it's been handling the whole production department for, wow. I don't know how many, like 15 years, more than 15 years now.
Amazing.
So and that's where like I had seen, you know, right now we talk about the 9 to 7, like 9 to 5, yeah. that life, that okay, work-life balance. I've seen my dad, you know, going early morning, traveling like 20, 25 kilometers from home, coming back late at night or sometimes spend nights because it's a manual labor. It's a production, you know, and I have heard him screaming and cussing on the
right,
calls
right.
because we know how, like how difficult that part yeah. is. But, you know, he has always been the inspiration for it.
Wow.
I've seen people drive, like I didn't need to look out for inspiration of working. And he always had that work ethic that you do something, you do with full honesty and full commitment. And that's where, you know, when I started my animation, let's say it was like, it was not a typical college life, I would say, because, you know, I was part of, it was with Maya Academy of Advanced Cinematics, MAC, right? It's all over. So earlier they used to have these smaller courses where you like private diplomas. So that was, I think, 2009, sorry. So 2009 was the first year of them collaborating with IGNU to launch a 3-year degree course for animation.
Okay.
So I was the first batch, I think, in India to get a BA AVFX. So there was no degree like that before it. Right? And I would say, like, you know, in our branch, we were like only 4 people.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And the fun part is, I am like, who was about to go into engineering. My other friend who finished first year of engineering and came and joined. Then another friend who finished 3 years of engineering and left and came. And then we had another person all from science, like one lady. And it was such a fun time, I would say. Like, you know,
wow.
We just literally lived in our classes. Like we used to have like alternate days classes and since it was a distance learning, so we used to have like, you know, go to colleges and give exams. And that's how it was. So 3 years went by. Like I studied like, you know, After Effects, Photoshop, all the Adobe Suite in the first 6 months, I would say. Like when people talk about, you know, Adobe CC right now, Photoshop. I'm like, I started using Photoshop when it was CS2. It was not even cloud. This is wow. like 2009. Now, like 14 years back, I learned Photoshop.
Wow. Wow, that's a long time ago because I started with CS5. I started with CS5 back in the day.
Yeah. At that point of time, I think you also started CS5. We didn't know there was UI UX. We knew something. Okay, there's something called web development. There's something called web design where you need to know coding. You need to know HTML or Java. Right. And that was not something which was part of our course. Our course was whole related to, you know, CGI, making 3D and, you know, animation all around it, VFX. And I specialized in VFX. Like I used to like making, like make things blow up and like that. And I would say 2012. I think that's when Life of Pi was released.
Yeah,
I'm correct.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember. And animation industry was going on a downfall at that point of time.
Okay.
Because studios were closing down, and you know, I finished my college in, you know, did the whole showreel, and I was home for 2 months. I was just sitting. And one thing I would say, best part of work in animation was, you know, I would sit and play games or watch movies. My parents would come. I'm saying, I'm studying. This is what I want to do. And this is what I did.
Wow.
2 months, I would say. But in between, you know, I was going around and we were making like short films and all of that. And one day I got a call, like some friend of dad's somewhere said that, hey, there's an agency in Andheri, and they are looking for some motion graphics artists. And I said, like, I can do motion graphics because I've learned After Effects. I know good. And that's where my first job went in, like, you know, like first job in advertising. Like I used to do like small time, I wouldn't say job, like part-time things to, you know, being an invigilator in the classes. Like you have these 10, 12 students, we used to go distribute papers, make sure they do the paper. And we used to get paid hourly. That was like my first job. but you know, in the 3 years of animation, I didn't do any freelance at that point of time. And freelance concept was not so popular because you need contacts at that point of time. We were not so connected that we are today, I would say. And that's where I got in. Like the first day I went for the interview, they gave me a test. As soon as my test was done, I was hired on the spot. And because they liked my skill on After Effects. And, you know, my first job was basically, there were this set of videos for an insurance company, which were shot in Hindi and English. My first job was take those videos, take the different edits of the videos, replace the English or Hindi content with Hindi, Gujarati, Tamil, Malayalam. Okay. So we used to get like script that, okay, this is the script, this is the word, you need to replace it exactly. That was my first job. Like we, I think at that point of time, we did somewhere around like 180 videos. That was the whole team. And we had a team, like I was working with this company called Twist in the Tail Studios. It is part of Think Why Not Goop. They still do a lot of corporate. And that's where I got exposed to a lot of, you know, corporate work. So we used to work with like brands like ICICI and, you know, Kotak Mahindra, all these brands to do their, you know, event films, in-house communication, all that. And that's also where I did my first, I think, television show. It was for a travel show on a Marathi channel where I did like, I actually like, there was someone who already established the graphics and all. So I used to make the, you know, coming soon part, like after, just before the break, you used to get those smaller parts. I think in the generation of Netflix, people don't know what coming soon next is, that used to get, okay, glimpse of what will happen after the break. Right, I used to do those and the first title sequence because each episode was different location. So that has to be incorporated. And that's where the journey began. So I did that. I did like, okay, you know, after 1 year, I wanted to again switch to 3D. I was like, you know, I've been doing motion graphics, but I always had that thing for 3D. And one of my friends said, hey, you know, I have joined this studio. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to join it even if they're paying me low. And I resigned from my job. And just before, I would say just 10 days before my last day at office, I got a news that, hey, this studio is not so working well because they are not paying salary out there. And I'm like, okay. So I have already put my resignation. So you know, I left my job. I was at home for a while. And then one of my project, like that time project managers, he had started his own firm a few months before I left. So he called me up and he called me for a freelance gig. I said, you know what, see, I want to get into 3D. So I would do a freelance for you. And, you know, but anytime if I get an opportunity, I'll move on. And he was okay with that. And that's where I worked, right? I worked with Home Films and Multimedia. And that's where, you know, I learned a lot because it was a small team. It was, you know, my project manager who was running the business and I was doing all the After Effects, you know, all the templates and everything. And then we had one editor and I used to also do edit. So that's where, you know, I experienced that startup life. That, okay, it's a small team and you get to do a lot. Like, I would say we used to literally go in office. Like, I remember we used to do this event, like ICICI, I think Mumbai used to have this event on 1st of April, like, because for them, it's the financial year start, right?
Right.
and the their regional manager, I think that point of time, he used to always want to motivate his team. So he used to, you know, make like do interviews with, like, these are all internal communication, right? I don't know, people even know that these things happen behind the ground, because people just know that, okay, you know, there's advertising, there's filmmaking, but there's so much, you know, corporate content happens in agencies that, you know, that's a altogether a different landscape in advertising. Right. And that's where things went. Like, we used to go to office and we used to literally stay in their office for 2 days, 3 days. like, you know, we used to go, we used to take our systems because we were a small team. Right. And we wanted to show that, hey, we are working on. So the CEO, the regional head used to come in like after their work hours and check that, you know, okay, how is coming? We'll show the demo and they will give us correction. So we have like, I'll be sitting on fixing all the templates. I'll have like other editor who's working on the main film, which is like 20 minutes, 30 minutes long. And it used to be like, you know, sports theme. Okay, this year's theme is sports. So we used to source footages, you know, from YouTube and all, like cricket and everything, right? And we used to pull in and build up those stories. Like, there used to be story. That was like, the whole idea was to motivate the team for the next financial year. Like, yeah, this year, you know, we targeted like 1 crore or 5 crores of revenue. Next year is 10 crores. That's the plan.
Right.
And that's where I, you know, got that sense of experience we talk about. Right. The regional manager, he just wanted to create an experience for his whole team to get them moving. And that experience was, you know, to uplift their spirits. And that's the power of media. You don't realize that, you know, unknowingly, it simulates a certain part of your brain, your heart. It just moves you. Like, you watch a good film, you just feel like, you know, so good, like coming out. You watch a dark film, you will be messed up, right? It's so much at a psychological level. And that's ingrained in our DNA, I would say, because if you see cavemen, they started by drawing wall paintings. It was not art. It was a form of communication. To communicate, to address, because there was no language at that point of time. It was just pictorial, right? And that was one experience thing. And that's the first thing. And then, you know, I got into, one of my friends had gone to Bangalore for masters, and I was like, you know what, I would also want to do masters. And my dad was like, yeah, that's fine, if you want to do, that's okay, I'll support you. And that's where I've been glad for my parents, right? Like, he's been always supportive and you know, anytime decision. And that's where I've met a bunch of, you know, all these people who have been my close friends. Like, I was in animation, and I would say, like, I did my master's in NICC Bangalore. So we used to have this co-ed hostel, right? And our college was like a small bungalow around in Hennur area.
Okay.
You wouldn't even know it's a college, but it was a small institute. And, you know, we used to live like in a co-ed hostel, and my hostel room was biggest. Right? I would say one of the peculiarities of our hostel was none of the rooms were the same size, because it was a weirdly structured.
So okay. I would
say that. So since my room was biggest, it was like a party room also. So we had chill times, but that's where I, you know, I met friends from different batches, and even faculties, some of the faculties who were young, they used to also stay with us. So we used to interact, right? So that's where I learned more on the theory part. Like, since in my bachelor's, I learned like software, because it was like driven by more, like, it was a software teaching institute. They used to teach theory at a certain level, but you know, more dependent on practicality. But at my master's, I understood, hey, there's, you need to understand what is the foundation of things, how things came to be. When we call, you know, history of art, history of design, there's a reason people refer to it,
right?
Because there's so much treasure hidden in it that you won't even understand that, you know, what you do today, which you feel like is very simplistic, was someone's dream like 50 years back.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right? Like,
absolutely. Yes. I mean, the thought itself is so, it's powerful in a way because somebody thought about this and we are actually living in it because he thought about it or they thought about it. They worked for it and they created it for us.
I would say if you check out, 1970s and 80s or somewhere around 60s when, you know, we had the first moon landing, it was 40s somewhere. But yeah, in that era, you had this artist who had painted their futuristic vision, like in 2020, how the world would look.
I've seen those,
Right, like the flying cars and these retro, like you still had that retro feel, but the futuristic, like,
exactly.
And that's where, I don't know if you remember the cartoon Jetsons.
Absolutely. I loved it.
Right, like Jetsons, like you had Jetsons and Flintstones that were running at the same time and you could see what a past was.
Yeah.
Yet the past was also kind of futuristic because their tech was also very, like when I used to watch Flintstones, I was like, wow, dinosaurs could be used like that. We never
knew. Exactly.
And Jetsons, and you know, that's where I see that, you know, people had a vision.
Mm.
It's not about, you know, that, you know, you just someday wake up and it happens. No, it's a vision. People move towards it.
Yeah.
Though that not all the visions are successful right now. I would say people thought flying cars would be there, but we have dog filters and, you know, coming in. That just, every day we invent like hundreds of filters. And
more. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, flying cars, I think the closest that we've come to is VTOL jets, vertical takeoff and landing jets.
Yeah.
And flying taxis somewhere in Dubai. I think Middle East Uber came up with it and then Airbus was working on something similar. But yeah, I think it's interesting space. There's still a lot more to come there. Uber also invested in some of the things. I think Uber Elevate was the...
Uber has, in Bangalore, they have Uber helipad. Basically, when you get out of Bangalore airport, you can book a helicopter, I think, from Bangalore airport to, I think, Electronic City.
Oh.
Because that's like another end. And it's like a two-hour drive. Like it's completely. So for all these big delegates who come from abroad and come from like IT company, right?
Mm.
So they started this service. And they used to be like, I think one seat was like $4,000 something.
It's not bad actually for them.
For them, like,
it's not
for
bad.
Us, no.
Yeah, not for us, but for them, it's not bad.
Like that was, I think, at that point of time. So it used to take you directly to Electronic City. You get to skip the whole traffic.
Wow, the traffic. Yeah, I mean, imagine somebody's landing at what 9 o'clock in the morning, and then having to travel to Electronic City. It would take them at least they'll reach at lunch or something.
So they used to have like on the go meetings and everything.
Yeah.
But that's where we see, right? Like these innovations happen. The technology and all. And I was, as I was saying, when I got exposed in my master's, the theory aspect, like the faculties used to teach us and I used to go around books. And then I had these people, like I was in animation. So my assignments used to be different.
Mm.
I had my friends who were in visual communication.
Right.
And the fun part is like, I used to always do my assignments at the last moment. I used to be around helping other people because I'm like, my thing, I know how to do. Like I need to make an animation. I need to make a video. I can make it. I have 2 years of work experience. I can polish it. And that's how I was always, you know, the last moment guy. Mm-hmm. And I still sometimes regret it because it doesn't work always. Especially when you work in UX, nothing works. Nothing can be done at last moment.
It's not
a helpful thing, I would say. And
actually, I am going to ask a question here. Because
you can.
I mean, for somebody to, I totally relate to that because even I am sort of wired that way because there are a lot of common things in what you have gone through and what I have gone through. So I want to ask a question here. When you say that you were totally doing things at the very end, and now UX is structured, right? It is structured step by step. It has to be done. It has to be that way because If not, then you end up risking a lot, right?
I can't agree more with you, because I'll tell you, like, after I finished my master's, I worked with a studio for 6 months, and then I went back to Mumbai. And I joined like one of my contacts in a, again, I joined a startup. Like, it was a small team. It was just two of us. And I used to work on, you know, title sequences, trailers, all these things. Like, I used to work with clients like Z and, you know, a lot of regional films at that point of time. So I used to make title sequences, motion posters. So it was all a visual and promotional. Everything had to have a sense of storytelling. People don't know what is happening behind the scenes. There's a video that is released. You just see the video, you enjoy it, and you go.
Yeah.
Right. But behind the scene, it's done. Someone has to work on After Effects, jump between Premiere, coordinate with editors, and, you know, get the music run around here. So I did that for 3 years, like almost 3 years, like somewhere around. And as I was doing that, right, like, it was fun. Like, it was such an amazing experience working with it. I'm still contact, like, with my, you know, Xbox, and he's a good friend of mine, and, you know, we're still contact. And it was such an amazing experience. Like, I could get to meet like film stars and film release. You could see, like, to see your name on the silver screen in the credits, that's like, nothing can stop it. Like, people used to say that, you know, okay, what kind of work you do? I used to that time say, hey, to see my work, you have to buy a theater ticket and go and watch it.
Nice, cool way of doing it.
Yeah, but that's where, like, that was one of the proudest moments. But, you know, somewhere I realized, like, that lifestyle I was living, right? Like, I'm still young, but at that time, I was, like, somewhere around, let's say, 24, 25 at age.
Right.
All right. And I used to stay in the studio for like a week. I used to go home, just get my change of clothes and stay there.
Right.
Work was good. People were good. But somewhere I felt that there was a mismatch between, maybe this is not something I want to do my whole life. And that's where somewhere I came in, you know what, I need a change. And that's how I decided to switch from films, but I never had an intention of UX. I would say.
Okay. I'm going to quickly stop you here and say, because see, the journey that I've seen is that you, I'm now taking you back to the motorcycle that you were on with your dad.
Yeah.
You know, okay. And then you're saying that I want to do animation. And then let's say seven years down the line, and you realize that, okay, this is not something that I want to do. Right, you've invested your bachelor's time, you've invested a couple of years working after that, or maybe more than that, and then you have done 2 years of master's, two and a half years.
Yeah.
Then you have worked 3 years more. So you have a few years that you've spent already.
Total, I would say almost 8 years experience.
Right. You, and then you had this chance of working in films and on films, and then you like see your name on the silver screen. Then you realize, okay, this is not for me. So what changed? What changed?
So I used to love creating, like, you know, these abstract things. So whenever I used to do like these title sequences, right? I used to love first watching the movie or, you know, the show, whatever I'm doing. I used to watch and I used to take elements, inspiration from them and include them in my title sequences. I used to enjoy that. But, you know, somewhere then I realized I like, you know, I always loved something like creating a workflow, fixing, like, you know, how things work. I was always interested in it, and I always like to create something that keeps moving. And I would say, like, this I realized when I was in animation, studying animation also. That point of time, I used to be very fascinated with creating rigs in 3D space. We call something as rigs, like when you create a 3D model, you actually need to rig, like you create a human, you need to literally put bones and set up that full structure to make the bones move as per you want. That's how the whole animation works. Right? And I used to enjoy making those rigs, like the complexity. But sadly, at that point of time, it was 2012, none of the institutes used to teach rigging like as a course specialization. And if you want to get into rigging, you need to learn coding and a lot of complexity. And because there was a high bar, like if you see like the way CGI industry is,
right,
there's so many people getting in. So I couldn't get in, but then I realized that, hey, you know what? I need a change. I don't know what it is. I like creating. I like, you know, making systems. But I'm not so systematic, but I like that, you know, bringing order to chaos, right? And that's where I just realized, okay, you know, I need a change. And like, it doesn't matter where it is. Let me see what opportunities come in.
So did this thought that I need a change, did it make you feel sad?
I didn't think so.
At that moment, no?
I didn't think so because, you know, I felt sad that, hey, what am I doing? Like somewhere at that point of time, I was like, what am I doing with my life? Is it something that I want to do? I questioned myself. And funnily, this was like, you know, one of those days where I had gone to my cousin's wedding and, you know, I was just sitting in my hometown, like village. And one of the things I liked was there was no building above like two floors there. You could see just the vast sky and the jungle all around. And it was a, like a typical village house. And I was just sitting outside and thinking, you know, is this something I want to do with my career all along? Like work is good. People are good. Everything is good. But is this something that can sustain me? Like, do I see myself doing it for next 20 years, 30 years? I don't know. And, you know, I just then spoke to my friends and I said, you know what? I'm looking for a change.
And
I would say I am one of those people who didn't get into UX with a UX portfolio. I didn't have any.
We have to talk about it. We have to talk about it. So how did you get into UX if you did not have a portfolio? Let's say, okay, let's put a number. Which year was this?
This is 2019.
Okay, it's very recent now.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is 2019. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I finished my master's in 2016, 2017. Right. I was back in Mumbai and 2019, right, like mid of year. And that time I decided, you know what, I need to change. And that's where my current company comes into picture, right?
Like, right.
You know, so Divami has been, I've been part of Divami, I would say, from the time, I think from 2016 itself, because my best friend from college, she joined Divami as a UX designer, Diya, and, you know, she was working. So, and at that point of time, Divami was still a smaller company. Like, we have grown much, right? But they used to have like these small video requirements. So I used to do just like for like, since Diya was there, so I had like not much costing enough. So, you know, I told, she was there, she's been working for like almost three years now. She was a senior designer there and everything, she was handling UX and client. And, you know, at that point of time, they were looking for someone to join, you know, their UI team and something. And I was talking to other friends to see opportunities in companies like Ola and, you know, where video production was there. I was like, okay, let me see. I can still use my video production skills and motion graphic skills to bring in.
Right.
And that's where my friend said, hey, you are my best friend. You can't go to other places. Why can't you come? I was like, yeah, I can still do, you know, let's say UI design, because at that point of time, I said, you know what? I know Photoshop, I know Illustrator, I know image manipulation, I can do graphic design and all.
Right.
How difficult it is. Like, I can learn, right? I can switch. It's just that I need to understand the tool. I need to understand, study a little bit more on, you know, what UI is. And then she spoke to the team. Like, she spoke to Pratima and all. And I spoke to Pratima at that point of time. And what Pratima said that, you know, we like your attitude. We like the approach you take. And don't worry about, you know, not knowing things. We can teach you, but we need the attitude.
Right.
Right. That learn and, you know, ready to break your boundaries.
Right.
Right. And that's where, you know, that's where I said, okay, you know what? I want to work with this company. Because it's very hard to find companies that, you know, push you to learn and upskill yourself beyond your comfort zone. Like,
yeah,
it's more than a company, it's a family for us.
And yeah,
we all have that energy going around, right?
Yes.
And I would say at that point of time, right, I used to, when I, you know, decided to change careers, I also started learning by myself. And I used to always watch like Chris Doe and Jose Caballer, like, you know, The School.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, Jose Caballer and Chris Doe were like kind of an inspiration because they spoke about, like, I'd watched their videos like 2016, somewhere around, talking about UX user experience. So I just had a hint and I knew like my friends were doing so what UX experience is. And I started learning there. And then like I came to Hyderabad.
Right.
And this is my first job in UX. Like I did do an assignment.
Yeah.
I did do an interview round, but at that point of time, my maximum I could do was, you know, from the research to the workflow part. I didn't do wireframes.
Right.
And that's where, like, September of 2019, I landed, like, came in Hyderabad.
Right.
And I started my UX journey.
And look at you now. You're the lead UX of Dipami right now. So it's quite a journey. I want to talk about this journey also, how you reached where you are right now. But I want to, before we get into that, now I want to also ask, how has the understanding of UX for you changed over, you know, the span of 3.5 to 4 years now? So how has it changed? So if I ask you, what is UX now? How would you define it?
I would say UX is all around you. Like, generally, UX, in a context, if you say, it's specific to devices, whatever you use, but experience is all around you. It's all defined, like we spoke about, right? It's experience comes from interaction. The first experience human had was human and nature, right?
Right.
That was the first experience. That was the start of evolution.
Yeah.
Right? And it's all around us. And now what we are doing is we are defining experience in a very, you know,
right,
contained scope to make it more, how do you say, tangible, I would say. And that's where my, like, I've understood, like, and this I like to dwell in a little bit of philosophy as well. So my talks are that it's not like all technical and all
totally
that.
Fine.
Right. And totally I like, fine. Like, I always liked psychological aspects of things, like how humans behave. Why do they behave? Why do they think in a certain manner? And that's where I think UX has given me a, you know, lot more exposure. And I would say it's just a tiny part of thing that I still know. I think there's a whole wide world, like, you know, there are so many things to understand,
absolutely,
and so many things to go in. But I would say whatever we design, right, as designers, you don't realize how much of an impact you are making on humanity, I would say. That's where it comes in. Like, people feel like you are just designing a screen or you are just designing, you know, a design system. No, you are designing an experience. You are designing a tool or a device for someone to save some amount of their time in life.
True.
Like, why do we design? Like, why do we have Uber? Because they saw that people are tired of going out of their home, looking for a cab, getting rejected, not finding it properly. So they brought it to you.
Yeah.
Instead of you going to cab, the cab comes to you.
Absolutely.
That was the idea. That saves your time. That gives you more comfort.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where things happen. Like, you need to understand it's your smallest of things. You never know where it will go. Like, I was just finished this book called Creative Selection by Ken Cascinito. I don't know how my pronunciation might be right, but he was an engineer with Apple for almost, I think, 8 or 13 years.
Oh,
I don't
wow.
remember the exact time frame. Like, he was the person who created the keypad on iPhone.
Oh wow.
He made the you know, he made Safari browser. He was part of the team who created Safari browser for the first time.
Mm.
And when I was listening to him, like, I listened to more of audiobooks because reading, I know, like, I have so many books around me I have bought and kept, but I read two pages and I get distracted. That's a bad habit. Right? Like, but when I was listening to him, right, I just, like, in everyday comment, I was listening to his story of, you know, coming up with Safari browser in an era where Microsoft was dominating the whole browser and OS industry. Like, because Microsoft Internet Explorer was the thing. There was nothing close to it.
Yeah.
Right. So how they went ahead with the open source, you know, code system, got an inspiration from open source browser, got it in and tried to run it on iOS.
Yeah.
Like, that whole journey. And when I see that, you know, a company like Apple who created a keyboard, like the QWERTY keyboard, the touch keyboard,
yeah,
in an era where BlackBerry was the thing.
Was the thing. True, true.
Right? Where people without, like, you couldn't imagine a phone without a keypad.
Yeah.
So when iPhone was announced, there was an uproar saying that, hey, it's a $500 phone.
Yeah.
How are people supposed to buy it? It doesn't even have a keypad. What? How do you expect people to pay for it? And
experience?
But the day it was launched, there was huge lines all around. And that's how, like, Steve Jobs, you know, from a business point of view, he had a vision. He knew what he wanted. He was always, like, clear with his feedbacks and everything.
True.
And when I was listening to his story of keypad, you know, creating that QWERTY keypad and with autocorrect feature. So that was one of his struggle.
True.
There's one line he said that, you know, I created this, like, we created this keyboard and keypad with autocorrect, but the whole inspiration is to give some more time. Like, people could do multiple things, not just, you know, while typing. Like, you don't need to. There was, I think, one of his colleagues who was having a chocolate bar in his hand and he was testing out. The bar was still there, but he was still able to type it.
Right.
And today, when we see, we have, like, so many keypad, like, I don't think so people can imagine a phone without a keypad.
Yeah.
Like with a keypad, yes. But with the keypad and the way it works, we don't know. Like, there's so much happening behind the scene. People had to go through so many struggles to get that out.
Yeah.
It has become a standard. And that's how technology, you know, just assimilates into the society. And that's where, like, the impact it made, the impact it had put on the whole technological development. People couldn't imagine a full touchscreen device, right? At that point of time. Like, I remember
when
iPhone came in, I think iPhone had only one button, even from the start, right?
Yeah,
that was our
idea.
That point of time, there were still phones in the market, which, like, Sony Ericsson, and, you know, they were having touch phones, but they still had, like, few more buttons.
Yeah.
Right? You could still, like, navigate. But iPhone redefined it. See, people say that, you know, Apple is a luxury brand. It's, yes, that's the way they have established. But their whole culture, like, if you look into it, the, you know, into that book, they define seven like principles they work on. Like, the whole culture around in Apple is defined by those. Like, imagine, in one of, like, they are so driven towards design, they had, like, you know, in the cafeteria, once someone was, they were discussing why the pizza comes in a square box. It's a round pizza.
Right.
And there were people who tried to design a round box with the most optimal, like, way. They did that. That's how driven they are. Like, that's their company culture.
Right.
That's where we could see a lot of innovations happening. And, you know, the period from, I think, 2007 to 2015, I would say it was a peak period in innovation where Apple, every year, it was just raising the bar and the other companies were matching up to it. Right. And that's where,
true.
When you listen to, like, these big people doing, like, so many things in so many different ways, you understand, hey, what are we exactly doing?
That's so true. And very well put.
about the experience side of it, user experience side of it. We have discussed quite a lot of things today. And thank you for taking our time for this episode. And it's very interesting. I'm sure students will definitely relate to this, because quite a journey you've had from animation to, you know, UX, which is very, very different. We don't see many people doing that. And then, you know, leaving something behind which you've worked on for 8 years, and then, you know, leaving it because it wasn't what you wanted to do, just goes on to prove the point that your interests can change with time, and it is okay to take that shift also, to follow that.
Exactly.
You know, so thank you for sharing that story. It's very inspiring and definitely has made me feel a little more passionate about design today, for sure. So thank you for doing that today.
I'm just glad, man. I'm so honored to be on your show and, you know, talk about